Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, Masonic Effects. Oh my goodness, we're closing in on the end of our 11th year. We're going to be just a few days, 12 years. Can you, who would have thought that when we started this off, it would have reached this far into the future? It's wonderful. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's a good show today. I have to admit, I have this sense of contentment. I know there's a lot of uncertainty going on, but you know, and I think when you think back on it, there's always, you know, we wake up, there's a bit of uncertainty. We're always making decisions, and we're comforted by that. If somebody comes along and tells us, "Oh my goodness, you must be worried because there's so much going on." Well, of course, we're worried, and it's all because you just want to take a moment and set us all on Santa's knee, wisdom, you know, in a fantasy world, that we're quite capable of sorting out what's going on around us without somebody trying to maneuver. And if we happen to be in that temporary bliss state where we're just enjoying. It's no crime, no need at all for somebody to come along and try and rain on that parade and tell us and inject the horrors. That's always there. There'll always be people that will be trying to, you know, gaslight us and outmaneuver and all the rest of that stuff. But the bottom line is my lovely physician friend likes to say is that we got this. We understand, and we are stepping back and enjoying. We're enjoying the view, just like you are, wherever you happen to be. And oh my goodness, I cannot get too far into this pre-Christmas show. We're only a week away from Christmas, so I'm feeling good about that. So, I'd like to introduce you to each other in a small way, if I can, if you don't mind. To our listeners in Japan, hello and welcome back. It's a pleasure. New Zealand, what's up? You're facing summer. Oh, you poor dears, you know. Enjoy. Absolutely. Brazil, it's a pleasure to have you pull up your chair or lean back. And Zambia, Oman, Pakistan, China, Ethiopia, South Sudan, Latvia, the UK, Ireland, the USA, and Canada. To listeners, whether you're in, you know, those areas of the world where our practices need to be carried out in private for security reasons. You're not alone, and it's not the first time. We've prevailed for centuries. But we share that feeling of we who are more privileged, share the seriousness, wish you continued success. I wish you all continued success. But that list of 14 nations is the audience, is our audience, is my audience, is you. And we're grateful for that. Now, all of that gushing gratefulness. And if you were here, of course, you'd get a hug and or a high five, or you know, or a bow, which suits, which is more suitable. But none so much that would take us away from our gratitude. Thank you. And because you're here and have been for a great long time, we need to do just a little better next year. I don't know even what the hell that means anymore, a little better. You know, stay on top of things. Well, that's going to happen. We're not about to throw our hands in the air and say, oh, this is ugly. We didn't see this coming. Well, of course we did. Of course we did. Existential crisis around, and we look at each other and wonder and doubt, can that fellow do what I'm capable of doing? I'm the courageous one. I'll step up. I'll park my car. I'll get rid of plastics. I'll be concerned about the mass extinction, animal extinctions. And I will expect the gaslighting politicians around me to straighten their, get their act together. And it's the same conversation you have wherever you are. It's us that are going to do this, and it's us that is going to experience what's happening around us, and we'll make the necessary, all of them necessary adjustments. And we can count on each other. Now, as I said to, not too long ago, I said to a worshipful master who was frowning a bit, he's a worrying kind of fellow, which I love, that we had his back. I reminded him of that. Even the dilettantes, the boyish dilettantes, you know, oh, too old, you know, when you're 65, you shouldn't get, you've lost that. You don't need to be doing that kind of nonsense anymore. But even everybody realizes, yeah, we've got this back. You may be like us in the role, but we've got it covered. And so with you, regardless of wherever you are, you're likely to, I'm likely to stumble over you. And I could be that next fellow. Who can tell? Or now, that next woman who is practicing the ethics and values of Freemasonry. Oh dear, I know the lightning strike, you can feel it. I never knew that these ideas, I'm gentlemen, I've gone all old school. I'm looking into, you know, the fragments that I can put together, the Kabbalah and the early faiths, and there is something in conclusion that I'm beginning to understand that. Simple boy being taught the simple sense of faith, religion, has gone on through to think of that the great creator as a force in the universe. And thank you, James Webb Space Telescope, for adding new dimensions and questions to all of that. A fabulous time. But the if there are truths out there, I may not ever find one. We have much to understand about these forces around us, and somebody a long, long thousands of years ago drew the suggestion that the creator was beyond the comprehension of a mortal like me, is more hermaphroditic. It's genderless. oh, that just made me feel so much clearer when I heard that. I'm thinking, well, how much does it matter? It's great, you know. It doesn't really matter. I haven't really given it that much thought, but for somebody to be postulating that thousands of years ago, I think, well, that's worth considering, isn't it? That being the case, then I'm simply being a little defensive, aren't I, about mentioning them. There may be a woman Freemason out there that's carrying on some kind of contribution to some benefit to society and her neighborhood. Why do women have that wonderful reputation and loudish people like me don't? Why is a woman seen as being more benign than the likes of me, especially in a dark alley? You know, oh, it's a woman. It's earned. It's earned. It's a manner, a way, a collective. You know, we study these things these days, you know, being the skeptics, and rightfully so. In our guidelines, we're seeing arts on one side and sciences on the other. Just amazing. It's like Sagittarius and Capricorn. You know, there's your orbit. There's your tilt. And the seasons happen in between. Those are the solstice. So celebrate, study it, and learn from it. What's it tell us about us? We have more in common than we like to admit. Far, far more in common. And we have those unpleasant relatives that come for the holidays and don't know when to leave. And sometimes they trick us and we actually elect them to represent us, but they don't. They go off on some tangent often. And remember, all those people who've got their back, well, they're like you and I. They're like you and I. They're helping the neighbors. They're watching out for their kids and the old boy who isn't getting out now as much as he did before, well, we have to give him a call every so often. Well, all of this kind of conversation happens around our lodges. And it's kind of really curious that one of the things we do really well, and far where I am in Upper Canada, we don't like to give ourselves too much credit. Oh my goodness, no. We're well down that road of enforcement and intimidation, even a bit of intimidation. You know, you hear the rules, must stick to the rule book. Yeah, like the rule book of life. Yeah, we like to band together. We like to come together. These meetings, these gatherings, we do it well. You know, we do it well, or we don't do it. We get, you know, there's always something else we can do. Truly, but when a bunch starts to invest in this ooga booga, in this mystery, we begin to find such interesting conversations. Then we get all artsy fartsy about it, don't we? We start to study things a little more serious, a little more in depth, and we find if that's also opened up some questions about ethics and all that whole practice, wonderful. It's quite wonderful. And then we are showing that esprit de corps, that nature. It's not us. It's like, you know, it's a familiarity. It's like a sign of, in a way, it's a sign of recognition. A way of conducting ourselves with one another, that feeling when somebody says something errant or a bit vague, as if we are all the world's greatest orators. We're not. We stumble along and we stumble like a little boy learning to walk. And often we stumble with our ideas like that. They blurt out and then we pull them back. We regain our balance and we go on. Well, we see that all around us. And sometimes some of the boys forget that they're being seen too. You know, it's all, we're all in it together. But we love the correction. Sort of going through all of that and then together finding resolution. And then finding that it's, what we did last week and last month leaves us open to facing what's coming next. And if you are in a part of the world where you celebrate Masonry regularly, even weekly, you're a beacon for us. You are a touchstone. You are a reminder that we're part of that. And the joy, well, there might be a lot of consternation going on in the background, but your hospitality, your gentility, your sensitivity to entertain and to stimulate broader, more meaningful conversations, it's tremendously effective and tremendously appreciated, even if. Now, here's the part that I think gets more interesting for listeners that tune into Masonic Effects. Even if it's the two of you, you and your mate, that is so old world. That is the conversation that someone overheard and wanted to join, or somebody overheard and wrote it down. That's the beginning. When you're asking yourself why, when you begin, why? When we were little boys, we didn't necessarily have an audience. And just beginning to credit ourselves with that ability. And I don't mean it's that, you know, as we're developing some cognition, you know, little kids will ask why and why and why. Well, and that's an interesting kind of a process that psychology has helped us unpack. It's not quite like that. It's more, you know, if I see some of the amazing physicists asking the question, it takes on a different harmony. It takes on a different harmony. And yet, same question. And will silly people be dismissive? Well, yeah, I'm not really equipped to argue with fools anymore. I don't have the patience, and I tend to avoid them. And I can do that, you know. And I can not necessarily do it politely. I try to be polite, but it's, you know, I'm out of here. That's why I like joining you. You sit back in your comfort with whatever glass of something that you love, and we talk, and we have this conversation. And we listen to some exquisite music that ought never to exist in a framework of Masonry, which arguably ought never to have existed. We are that unique. I love it. But think of the odds. We're breaking those odds all the time. Here we are, about 400 years down the road, branched off into a franchising, a standardizing Masonry of a sort. Really, how do you standardize free thinking? How do you standardize philosophy? Well, who's going to step up and bring that news to me? I hope it will be all of you. And if you're going to do that, then we need to sit back in a comfortable place. Perhaps with a nice warm fire at our feet, and have a chit chat, have a talk. It's that time of year again for us around me, and according to my background, to celebrate Saturnalia, celebrate Christmas in the best, not the way it's been cheap and distant. You can ignore that. You know how to do that. That is somebody groveling for that's. If that's all they can do, that's all they can do. You and I, we celebrate and we stop the groveling at the door. You know, you can grovel, but over there. And don't, no, not here. Don't interrupt us here. I have the next couple of weeks of reverie where I can just celebrate friendship and the best of what's around, the best that I have access to. And even if that's a sip of clear water, I'll celebrate it. Or I'll celebrate the sunrise as my ancestors in the clan tended to do for 1,000 years. There is something to the indomitable human spirit that we tap into all the time. And I think based on the inspiration that you give me and give us here at Masonic Effects, we're pretty solid for another, I don't know if I'm going to be, I'll say another 12 years, maybe. My old dad is now, I think, well, what will he be? Be 95, 96. So, yeah, I guess arguably, as long as I haven't lost the plot, we can still be producing versions of Masonic Effects and just blowing everybody's mind. How do they, Today's commentary, as if restricted by our history. Man, this is what would be the porterhouse steak of masonry, maybe, or the Pinot Noir of masonry. Yeah, the music. Well, there's so much, but next week will be Christmas, and I'll have a lot of it'll be my Christmas show. Lord knows what that's about. But it's just so inspiring. It was so easy to pull to produce this show today. The poetry, and I'm a slave. I know I'm a slave of William Shakespeare, and we're playing his 97th sonnet. If you have a playbook to go by, the rest of you, whether you're alone or with your loved one, sit back and enjoy, and let us attempt to entertain and inform. And at the end of the day, we'll come together here. Just a little sample to ease into the, don't you think? It's like, let's say we've been in the dark. And this is a little wake up for the show from Keith Jarrett. Don't worry about me. I want to thank you. Thank you. Here we are, somewhere outside the comfort zone. Yeah. As if restricted by our history. Tell me what you think of this. Are we restricted by our history? If we sense we are, is it permanent? Or is it a starting point? We take from masonry what we can. We do with it as we will. Let's not forget, no one said it is for everyone or that it is easy. It's just another way of saying, you know, we need to work on it. Whatever that means. It's like working on a marriage, working on a relationship with our children or our coworkers. Is it work or just something that becomes familiar? We have evidence of that in the spread of Masonic practices that have dominated far too many conversations far too long. It would be true if Masonry was static, that history restricts us. When we think that, we are, I think, taking a snapshot. We use it to examine more closely, but we don't lose track of the fact that while it gives us a picture to study, it is only an illusion. We can't stop anything, anytime. It's magic. If we want to reduce risk, we're learning from the experiences of others. If we are fortunate, we recognize what is credible, but never stop exploring what seems improbable. But that's absurd, you think? I tell myself history repeats itself, but it doesn't. But I tell myself to avoid complications, telling myself they are wasteful interruptions. We move forward along with everything else. Vibrations of different frequency with a difference. One of those vibrations is sensate. It has awareness of itself and all the other vibes, but far too abstract to tell a story. Our learning window is temporary as we are temporary. Masonry quietly extols us by feeding our curiosity and yearning. True is, we may say it is universal, and it would be true at some level if we weren't also unique specimens. Masonry may be more like a destination on a chart than a route to that destination. It soothes us knowing this disappointment schmozzle is a search for enlightenment. Doesn't come with clean lines or binary precision. It comes riding on spectrums, rainbows. Whether that has value depends on if and how it has been explained. Masonry touches all of us in different ways at different times, as it always has done, even before it was called Masonry. We are creating history every time we open. Huh. Imagine that. And somebody says we're being restricted. Well, yes, by when we start to define something, we are in a sense restricting it to that definition. Are we presuming that any one definition is all-inclusive? Well, when you ask me that question, my first reaction is, I hadn't thought of it. No, it isn't. It's those snapshots that we need when we are talking. You know, we talk around stereotypes, and they're very helpful because we can probe. We can start to understand things a little more depth. But it doesn't stop everything moving around us, all this vibration. It doesn't stop our sun seems to be centered, but we're moving through this universe, and it's drawing all of these planets in our galaxy with it, and we're all spiraling. You know, you think about it, it's like that. We're like corkscrewing through space, and you know we. When we're boys, we're taught, when we're children, we're taught that our little blue pearl is spinning, and now it tilts, as we know, winter solstice coming up, and it's going to tilt back. And the scientists are saying, oh my goodness, the polarities are going to change. It's amazing. And the fact that, 10 billion mergers of little clusters of cells have produced you or me. Oh yes, well that's simple. But there's got to be, you know, this great big unfathomable space around us. There's got to be more of us, right? We couldn't possibly be that unique, but we are. What next? What next? And that's the commentary for today. Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Shakespeare. Mind? It's a hard life, eh? We have to address poetry with an explanation. Here, we're tipping into one of his more notable, is there one that isn't? I don't know. One of the more notable poems, Sonnet 97. How like a winter hath my absence been. Yes, as I look over my shoulder, it's, wait, here. Oh, yeah, it's snowing. And there, where I am, the plows have been out to clean my driveway. And it's beautiful. It looks gorgeous. But you can see I'm sort of pleasing myself here, a poem with that starts with a line like that. Here, I'll give you the background first so you can hope. Let's see what you can connect with. This is an analysis of Sonnet 97 here. A learned one, I think. The speaker has been forced to endure a separation from the beloved. Ah, there's William for you. You know, that angst. Where is she? What's going on? Is she okay? Is he okay? I wish. And in this poem, he compares that absence to the desolation of winter in the first quatrain. The speaker simply exclaims the comparison, painting a picture of winter. How like a winter hath my absence been. From thee, the pleasure of a fleeting year, what freezes have I felt, what dark days seen, what old December's bareness everywhere. And then he says, in reality, the season was that of late summer or early autumn, when all of nature was bearing the fruits of summer's blooming. And then he goes on and he dismisses the wanton burden of the prime, that's the beauty, the bounty of the summer. He says it's unreal as the hopes of orphans. Mm-hmm. They could not have been fathered by summer because summer and his pleasures wait on the beloved. And when he is gone, even the birds are silent. And in the couplet, the speaker says that the birds may sing when the beloved is gone, but it is with so dull a cheer that the leaves listening become fearful that winter is upon them. So what's the point? The seasons, so often invoked as a metaphor for the passage of time, are metamorphized here and function as a kind of delusional indication of how deeply the speaker misses the company of somebody he loves. How like a winter hath my absence been from thee. The pleasure of the fleeting year, what freezings have I felt, what dark days seen, what old December's barrenness everywhere. And yet this time removed was summer's time, the teeming autumn, big with rich increase, bearing the wanton burden of the prime, like widowed wombs after their lord's decrease. Yet this abundant issue seemed to me but hope of orphans and unfathered fruit. For summer and his pleasures wait on thee, and thou away, the very birds are mute. Or if they sing, 'tis with so dull a cheer that leaves look pale, dreading the winter's near. To those of you who have, do you know bittersweet? You know that experience? Yeah. It's like that. Bittersweet life. And what do we do with it? We go on. Absolutely. Here. Thank you. do quite regularly here. This is talking about Le Longe du Juste, that 18th century lodge in Amsterdam, and what we can mine from it, what we can take away to help us understand, really. We're looking at the influence of British masonry in The Hague and around Amsterdam, and as a travel and mercantile center for a long, long time. And once we sort that out, we can begin to if it has had that bearing, that in 18th, does that bearing still influence us? Does, I would. It would be like, does Puccini influence my taste in music? I would hope, or Beethoven, or Mozart, or Schubert, or Wagner. I would hope, I'm a little guy from a small town far away, but I appreciate walking through the streets in Vienna in the wintertime, or listening to the Glockenspiel, and if I'm down in Bavaria. Let's, without distracting here, as Margaret C. Jacobs says, without detracting from the zeal and originality of the ideals proclaimed by this egalitarian. So let's keep in mind they had some historical antecedents for this sort of egalitarian socializing should be acknowledged. Kind of fitting for Christmas, don't you think? These precedents are ones that the lodge itself had an interest in collecting anecdotes and written tableaux about them. In the late 17th century, The Hague had been a center for upper-class précoisie, a movement with feminist overtones led by French aristocratic women. Also, within Dutch Republican and bourgeois circles associated with Johan de Witt in the 1660s, at least one club with important intellectual interests had admitted men and women as equal members. Reference to that club is made in the manuscripts of Le Longe du Juste. Just an unknown writer attempts to patch together its history. Another group of 18th century origins is also mentioned in the historic de Mops. It began in Austria in the late 1730s and may have been imitative of Masonic practices. The order was more of a social club for women where brothers, in quotation, paid court to mock heroic fashion to sisters who had titles.